welcome back to Claire T, the podcast where we spill the tea from A to Z, and now we're on D.
Darjeeling tea.
Yeah, what is that? How do you say it? We're drinking a tea today that I definitely have seen all over the stores, all over the years. It's pretty popular.
All over.
But it's got like
it's all over
a J place. In the middle of the word, so I don't want to mispronounce it. How do you say
Darjeeling.
It?
Darjeeling.
Wait. Darjeeling.
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 Darjeeling. Yeah, that's how you say it.
So, well, it tastes yummy. What am I sipping on?
You are slipping on a tea that is light and aromatic. Ooh. And it's
I got so excited I hit the mic
white,
with my mug.
The white variety. I believe there's also an oolong variety. Ooh. As well. It's super rich in antioxidants, as tea is. That's why we are such tea fanatics.
And those are good, right?
Yes, the antioxidants you want. They help you against free radicals and just help that the good cells keep generating and detoxing your system.
Detox
for D. I have a little quote here.
Oh, all right, here we go.
Get ready for this.
Okay.
If you are cold, tea will warm you. If you are heated, it will cool you. If you are depressed, it will cheer you. If you are excited, it will calm you. William Gladstone.
Cute. What was that specific to Darjeeling or just tea?
I think just tea.
Oh, that's just cute.
Tea in general.
Yeah, no, this does taste really nice. So this it's kind of florally, right?
Yes.
What am I tasting? Notes of a white flower?
Yes. White flowers just sprinkled in a field from India.
It's Indian. Yes.
It's an Indian.
Okay.
Here you go. Antioxidants are detoxifying cell damaging free radicals.
Okay.
So the free radicals that want to damage the cells, the antioxidants put up their dukes and fight them out with their polyphenols and their catechins.
Okay. And my doctor friends are going to text me and be like, nope.
The tea contains 8 to 10 times more antioxidants than found in fruits and vegetables. Word to your mother.
Well, yeah, could definitely get down with the Darjeeling than those, you know, helpings of veggies.
Yeah.
Do both. Good to know you can sub some of that D in.
This is not always sub the D.
As in Darjeeling. Make sure you get your D, ladies.
Get that D.
Get and it. Gents. Everyone needs their
everybody
D.
Everybody get their D. Okay, just everybody.
It is yummy, though, for real. I actually really like it. I don't know why I say actually. I'm not surprised, but
it's kind of got, like, a nice, warm, a little sweetness. The floral makes it taste a little sweet.
Yeah, I don't know how much white tea I drink. I'm very into grains and, like, Moroccan mint and, a breakfast tea, but I don't think I ever reach for the white tea varieties.
The whites are good.
So I'm like, okay, this is new, but I don't hate it.
No, don't hate it. It's good. Take a chance on the white teas. also, tea just in general is just really good for healthy hearts. And I found a statistic that says regular tea drinkers, that's us, Claire T.
That's all you,
our
hopefully.
Little tea potters. reduce the risk of heart attack by 44% compared to people who don't drink tea. Which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And it's also, they also
put your kettles on.
Put your kettles. We have so many fun tea jokes. Just wait.
They're not always good, but they're a plenty.
They're a plenty.
A plenty.
They're not so good.
Okay, we're done.
All right. And that's enough about the Darjeeling tea. I hope you enjoy your white varieties. And moving on to our pop culture. Juliana's going to spill the tea about what's going on in that popular culture.
Let's get to the tea.
Spill it. Welcome to Spilling the Motherfucker Tea. We're going to spill that tea.
Ooh, ah, it's hot.
Oh, it's so hot.
Piping
hot tea. What's happening with the piping hot tea?
Well, I would say this is like lukewarm tea. Like it's been sitting out and I wasn't super impressed by this tea, but people are talking about it.
So it's bitter. Did you leave the tea bag in or no?
It's not my favorite. Yeah. Maybe too steeped, too overdone. Which is Katy Perry's music video revealing she's pregnant. That's kind of cute, but the song's terrible. And also, the whole point of the song is that she's never been married, I guess, never worn white, but she's literally already been married. She's worn white at least one time. It just didn't really hit home for me. I'm not really a Katy stan. Like, I liked her song. I really liked teenage songs in the past. I liked Teenage Dream a lot, that album, but
I liked Firework.
Yeah.
That was my fave song.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I just haven't liked a lot of what she's put out lately. I'm happy for her, though.
I think
they're going to have a very beautiful child.
She needs a reinvention.
Yeah, they're going
to
have.
She's still, doing bubblegum pop. Yeah. And I think she needs to get a little. I mean, I know nothing about this industry, but.
Yeah, has been a lot of the same for a long
time.
She's
got a babe bae.
Yeah.
But.
You remember those iconic paparazzi photos of him paddleboarding literally naked with his penis out?
Oh my God, no.
Really?
How did I miss those?
Oh, they're really famous pop photos of them paddleboarding on a vacation together and she's fully in a swimsuit and he's on his knees paddling ween out.
It's amazing.
It's really good. Look it up.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I would do the same and just be like, forget the paparazzi. It's a shame they were there. But
yeah. So I support that. I don't really support the song.
I support your nudism. But
exactly.
And your, paddleboard nude all day.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
In other news, more intense, but good. Harvey Weinstein did get sentenced as guilty, which is really great. It's a big win.
It's a big win. It's still sad he's not dead yet, but.
Yikes. Yeah, he is. This has just been a lot.
Yeah.
Like the whole, it just feels like it's weird because it has really only been a couple years, but doesn't it feel like it's been a decade of him and in the news and just the culmination of this, it feels like more than two or three years.
2.5, 3 years, right?
It hasn't even been three since the Ronan Farrow articles. Yeah. It's wild.
Wild.
But he gets fully sentenced next week and could face up to 29 years. So
wow.
TBD. In a few days, we'll see what happens there. Kind of heavy, but kind of.
Is he eating candy in court or something? Was that a thing?
Oh, I don't know.
I heard he had Reese's and Snickers in court with him and he was eating that. I was no wonder you look so ill, sir.
Stop eating processed foods, you asshole.
Sugar, high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
it's not a meal.
It's not a meal.
But weird. Okay.
But he may as well get him now.
Glad things are moving in a positive direction with that.
Yeah.
Thank you for spilling that.
Yeah. In a less positive direction, but it's everywhere, literally. We got to talk about it.
Drink your Corona.
Yeah.
Hold the lime.
Well, of course, everyone.
Because the person who cut it didn't wash their hands.
Yes. It's. Unfortunately, we have to talk about it, but we're kind of talking about it in terms of entertainment because it's obviously affecting everything. It's affecting travel, it's affecting sales, but it's affecting the entertainment industry because people are not going to the movies. Like, I read somewhere ticket sales at the box office are down almost like 50% of what they were in 2019 for this week.
Wow.
It's not good.
Crazy. I know, like, SAG-AFTRA and SAG-AFTRA is, like, canceling, like, a foundation meeting they were having. And then Quibi is delaying their launch party.
Yeah.
And I think I can only speculate that movies will be postponing their launches, right? Because they don't want to do bad in the box office.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, exactly. If they're seeing people aren't going at all, like, it could be suicide to start launching your movie in April or whatever. It'll be really interesting to see what movies that have said they were, you know, slated for the next month or two, if they continue with it. Because it's not only obviously the box office sales that will suffer and people not going, but they can't even physically do the premiere.
Yeah.
If they're going to be canceling things like South by Southwest and all of this, they can't even have a premiere party or launch. Yeah. So it's crazy. We're just going to have to TBD on that one. Very interested to see what happens with Coachella.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
And Stagecoach?
No, all of them. But I feel I feel like Coachella is the one to watch because they're like the festival. And if they say, uh-oh, it's like, okay, festivals are not going to be a thing for a while, which is wild.
Goodness. Oh, crazy.
Yeah. Wash your hands.
Wash your hands, bitches.
Wash your hands.
And don't touch anything gross.
Drink that tea.
And drink your tea. Seriously, though, drink herbs. Drink your herbs, okay? They're good for you. Find the ones that are good for your body or what you need that fight off that bacteria. And your immune system gets stronger. And then you'll be corona-free.
Yep, that's the direction we're moving.
Yeah.
Strong immune systems.
Strong immune systems. Stay strong. Work out. Eat right.
The other direction we're moving is towards directing. Ooh. Literally. We got a really great interview for you guys with Leah Patterson.
Leah Patterson's a queen.
Upcoming iconic director.
Yes. Nominated by?
Cannes.
This girl.
Director to watch, Can.
Watch out for her, world. She's coming for you. She is so talented and just what a beautiful human being.
Yeah.
I aspire to be her when I grow up.
I know. Me too.
She was just so sweet and cool. She also told us how to drink tea, which is cool too. We definitely love her.
Yeah, she's about to drop some knowledge on the industry and about tea drinking. So giddy up and enjoy.
Giddy up, giddy up.
So today, D for directing, we are interviewing the lovely Leah Patterson. She is a female director, a multi-hyphenate, incredible person, 2019's top women in film to watch by diversity in Cannes, incredible, and part of the Ryan Murphy's HALF Initiative program, a directing program, which sounds incredible. He makes the best content. I think Scream Queens is one of the most slept on shows. Personally, underrated. Anyways, we're here with Leah and we're so happy to have you. Thanks for being here. And if there's anything else you want to talk about in your intro.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here. And I think it's really very cool what you're doing. I love tea. I'm Australian. We drink a lot of tea there.
Probably you guys still do afternoon tea, right?
We do. We actually do. And we come to the States and then the way you serve tea, we find it very strange. We're very influenced by the British culture, I suppose.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, there's tea everywhere in the world. But great. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So you're part of these... this directing program, do you want to tell us a little bit about that and how you even got involved in that? It was Ryan Murphy. It's a big name.
It is a big name.
We know it and love it.
Yeah, and I think it's very cool what he's doing and what the production company has done. So they've set up this thing called the Half Initiative. A few years ago, he looked around his own company and realized, well, I guess from his own experience, like his very first time directing, he realized that there was nobody like him specifically in the room as a gay man in Hollywood, in that room, in that specific position. And eventually, years later, he kind of looked around. He'd created this huge, amazing company, all these incredible stories, and then looked around and went, oh, well, we could be doing more about inclusion and diversity. And so he made a mandate for the company that said, great, we're going to have 50% women and other minorities behind the camera. So in positions of directing and you know, important positions like that. And then within a year, he did it. More than 50%. I think they had 60 or something like that. And so I feel very, very, very lucky to have been selected for their Half Initiative, which is a part of that process. So as a director, I get to shadow one of their directors on one of their episodics, on a show. And it's a way, it's one way to move down the episodic narrative directing road. So that's the direction that I'm heading right now. So he's literally creating opportunities for people. There's a lot of lip service in the industry right now. We're all hearing it, and it's really important that it's being talked about, and that that's one step towards changing representation and having more inclusion, which is better for everybody. And there's a company that's really actually doing it.
Yeah, I mean,
so like it's very cool.
Lip service, and I'm glad the conversations are happening.
Yeah.
Like even a few years ago in Hollywood, I would say these weren't even happening, but I think the actions matching is so important, right? Like you can do it. You can make that decision, but then you can implement it in a year. Like that is the important thing, is that it's being, the needle's actually being moved forward.
Well, I think that's something that is specific to the TV industry, because there are episodes being made week over week over week over week. And certainly the landscape we're in right now, where there is over 500 shows coming out this season. So if, I mean, not every single show is going to continue and have a season and move forward, but there's a lot that...
There's more work.
There's more work.
Opportunity for the diversity.
Yes.
D. Also a D word.
D, exactly. That's right. That's right. So, yes. So I think it's really great that his company is doing that. And other companies have programs too.
What is the landscape of directing in Hollywood right now?
I think there's change for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
So the landscape has changed over the last few years. So we've come through where I think we're still, we've come through this period of peak TV. Okay, so firstly, the landscape of Hollywood is
let's
huge.
Let's break it down.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah. It is. It's huge. It is. It's, yeah.
It's
yeah,
huge.
Gotta go broader.
Because there's so many different parts to it. So we have the film, we have film, specifically film. So within that genre, that's completely changed in the last few years. We're definitely in a time of tentpoles and franchises, and super high level, huge budget is where a lot of the industry is leaning into. It's one aspect of it. If we're going to just give it one sentence. And then if we're looking at the world of TV, which is a part of Hollywood per se, that's, we've come out of, or we're actually still in a time of peak TV, what they're calling peak TV. But I think even within that, that's flowing and changing already because of the way people are consuming their media. So it's almost being fragmented. So we're getting a lot more smaller studios, but the big studios are creating their own smaller studios within that. If you're looking back to film, that used to be done in a way where the big studios would then have maybe an independent arm of within their total company. But now you're getting that in the TV world as well. So it's like we've got HBO, HBO Now, and now there's going to be HBO Max. So it's like and all of the studios are doing different versions of that. So within that, a lot of content is being made. So people are really interested in stories. And then the next follow-on part to that is So we're not just watching through a film screen or a TV screen. We're watching through our computers, our phones, like every other thing. So the nature of it is also changing. So that was sort of called web series for a while. And now it's like short form content. And then, you know, we don't really know exactly what it's going to be called in the future. But it's just a time of change. So I think that that's actually really exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like it's really exciting because every day I feel like it's changing. Another studio is coming out with another little thing or it does seem like it's on this nice little wheel of like expansion, but in a way that serves a lot of people. So,
well, if the content's changing, like you said, so the directing must be changing along with it, right?
Agreed.
So, I mean, it has to almost to keep up.
It has to.
I mean, it has to evolve, like evolve or die kind of, right?
Exactly. But that's like all.
But it's exciting.
Yes, right? It is exciting.
New frontier.
I mean, it's a new frontier, but I do think that it is actually, so that the nature of what the content is changing. Mm-hmm. So if we are looking at the world of TV, that there used to be a lot more procedurals and things like that. There was a time when that was the actual standard format, when people used to have a 22 episode season and year over year. And over time, we've really seen that change. So then it becomes 13 episodes. Now we're in a time of like maybe
10 is like, 10. I just watched
Marvelous Mrs. Maisel,
eight. Right.
Yeah.
Yes. 8 episodes. I was
six
but the quality
10.
Is so good.
Mm-hmm.
Like it, every episode is like a movie, and then but they're just like cut down to 8 per season now.
Well, that gets back to your question about what is the landscape right now. I do feel like what's happening from a film perspective is being condensed in terms of time. So even a 1-hour episode of TV is like watching a whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's that is a part of something that is changing. The quality of the productions are very, very high.
Mm-hmm.
There's incredible artistry in all the departments. It's actually really, so I think that's something that has changed in the last few years, and I'm like curious to see like how does that continue.
Mm-hmm.
Because what content is, what a story is, how much time we have in our day to watch it, absorb it, consume it, whatever you want to call that, is changing. So we're doing it in little pockets of time right now. So I think that's really, I'm curious to see how that influences then the way stories are told.
Mm-hmm. And how you direct them, right?
And, yes, exactly.
Right, because there's more opportunities for directors, writers, anyone,
mm-hmm.
ostensibly right now with the almost saturation of content. Like there's so many shows, there's so many opportunities, but then it's like, how does your work cut through the pile and really hit and resonate?
Mm-hmm.
Or does it matter? Can you just be creating and be practicing and directing and doing your form, and you know, if it resonates with an audience or you get a ton of streams and it becomes viral, that's like the cherry on top.
It can be. I think it's both of those things.
I guess it can be all the same all at once.
At the same time, because the art itself does change over time. So for it, just as like an example, like an old world example of, we might have used a crane to get a really big shot of a cityscape or to come from far away to understand the world that we're in. And that would take a long amount of time to bring the equipment, get it all set up, have all the, safety people, all the things that you need to make that happen. Nowadays, we can do that with a drone. It's not the same, but it's a different thing. The nature of what it is has changed. So that's one way from a technical point of view that the craft is changing. But I think like all things, like as human beings, we change and develop over time. I'm influenced by what you do. You're influenced by what I do, by the nature, by everything in our world, the food we eat, what colors that are like popular right now, like all sorts of things like go into that. So, storytelling is in response to, and then there's another part to it, like what you were talking about in terms of creation. It's like artists and creating art. It is another way to make change, agitate for growth in the society. So sometimes that becomes systemic and formalized, like the Ryan Murphy program. So somebody goes, we are going to change this. Here are the steps that we need to take that we may be able to do it within our own circle. And sometimes that's from an artistic point of view where you go deep into your work, whatever you're exploring, and then you come up with something and then somebody else gets to see it, share it, experience it. And it may change or give them an insight about something that then changes the next thing that they go out into the world and do. So I don't know. I think that's something that's very amazing and cool about the world that we're in right now.
As a director, do you want to do more like for streaming or long versus short form content or film like movies, or what's your specialty? Are you open to all things, or is there, like, I know one guy, he just like directs music videos. Mm-hmm. That's like his niche, you know? So yeah. Like, where do you find yourself in all of that?
Ashley, it's a couple of things.
Yeah, great. I love those multi-hyphens.
It doesn't have to be one.
Yes. So right now I'm moving towards directing episodic TV.
Great.
So that's something specific that I'm on the road towards. I have a background in the theater and film. So it's a hybrid of all of those things. So sometimes it's something really specific. So great. I'm going to go and do this Ryan Murphy opportunity. Fantastic. So that's a specific thing. But I feel like if we look at what directing is, it's storytelling and bringing all of the elements together. So the thing that is super exciting about it is literally getting to work with all these other artists in this community. So
the collaboration,
which can happen in all of those art forms, whether you're making a commercial, a video, something, you know, like for music, if you're doing a TV show, if you're creating, the after shows, like there's all sorts of parts to it. And I think there's a time for all of it. So yeah, anyway, so the answer is yes. Yes and.
Yes and.
Yes and yes. Mm-hmm. Question. Yeah, and I think we've talked about this by we, because the listeners can't see who I'm pointing at. I mean, actually, both of you have talked about learning by doing. Like, mm-hmm. And for me, at least, I think I don't necessarily know what I'm going to really resonate with artistically, especially until I've tried it.
Mm-hmm.
So trying different things.
Trying different things.
Doing the episodic, like, intensive. Maybe that'll either light you up or you'll be like, not for me, but I'm glad I know it.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. And
it's the best way to learn.
I agree, and I feel the same way. And it's actually all about discovery, which is the thing. So
D. It's
D, another D, another D. Yes. Or, you know, people like actors, you know, you might call it research. Sometimes it's your dreaming. It's connecting the dots. How do you get from A to B? And so sometimes you need, firstly, I feel like you always have to go into your imagination to do that. Even if you're a scientist, you know, that's why Albert Einstein talks about imagination. It's more important than knowledge, because it actually literally helps you connect those dots and bring it all together. And for me, it is through the doing sometimes. It's like anytime you start a project, I often feel like, do I even know what I'm doing? Where am I going to start? And then you start with one little
just start
thing. Mm-hmm. Just
you
start.
Give yourself the permission to just start.
You find the hook, and it could be because of a specific character. It could be because of something that they're doing. It could be the landscape that they're in. Whatever is in that story, whether it's a political environment or an educational environment, it could be anything really. It doesn't matter. They're interpersonal. It could be about family relationships. But you start with one thing, and then it's really an amazing thing. The story opens up and it opens up and it opens up, and you're still learning about it. You can do all the prep, all the research, and then you start the work. You might get to production, and it is a crazy, crazy thing. And then you realize, oh, I'm still, we're still unpacking it.
Yeah.
It goes on.
Until it's in front of you and you're literally directing it and mm-hmm. seeing it unfold, you can't prepare for how something might hit or someone might read a line even, or...
Yeah, and also there's a thing that happens afterwards too, because, and that's perspective, that's either, you can call that a 360. So afterwards, somebody else sees the story, and how it affects them then changes, it informs what it was that you created, which is, like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm super curious about the directing process for you as an individual on set. Do you find yourself, because you have the writers, the session runners, or or the...
Like the showrunner?
The showrunner, yeah. Where it's, is it a lot of collaboration with them, or are they kind of free to hand everything over to you and just let you have at it, or...
In the world of TV, it's always a collaboration with the showrunner. It has to be, because it really is their baby. Mm-hmm. So I'm a guest on their set.
Mm-hmm. Interpreting probably what they've already ideated and written.
Exactly. And I think that that's one thing that I really, really, really love about directing. So they've created this thing, and then it's a gift, right? So it's given to me, and then I get to interpret it and respond to it and bring my ideas to it. Mm-hmm. And then I get to work with the actors and the production designers and the costumers and all of the different, all the myriad of everybody who's involved. Mm-hmm. And then they bring their ideas to it. And it actually, it evolves and changes over time. Yeah. And it's very, very cool.
That's cool. Yeah. Sounds really great.
Yeah.
Your most recent that you directed was the Bridget and Ian?
Most recently was a play called Oracles and Miracles by the same writer as Bridget and Ian. The last couple of years I've worked with a writer called Narelle Scott. She's from New Zealand. The Bridget and Ian was a play first, and I had an opportunity to direct that here in Los Angeles. We worked together on that. And then she adapted that play, and we made it into a film, which was a really amazing experience. And she's an incredible writer, so we sort of basically kept working together and did a play last year called Oracles and Miracles, and that had a video component. So we went to New Zealand and shot there, and then did the play here in Los Angeles with a whole New Zealand cast, which was amazing. And right now I'm editing something else. So you know, like most of us here in LA, you're juggling a lot of balls.
How do you find feedback goes as a director, good or bad? I'm just curious, like...
Ooh, taking or giving?
Giving. Mm. Well, both, but, you know, you're seeing it, it's your interpretation, really. You're kind of coaching in a way, right?
Sometimes.
I'm still learning totally what a director does. I think we all have this idea from what we know from Hollywood.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's my... Yeah. I don't think that's exactly what goes on. So it's like... Or if that's not what goes on, maybe tell us about what does go on. Because I have this, that kind of image of cut, do this, yes, keep going, or I don't even know.
Well, that's one part of it once you're actually in production. Right. I mean, but that can only happen after you've already done all of the prep. After you,
which people don't talk about. Maybe that's not as glorified.
What's the director's prep? Is that a question?
I mean, that is a question. I think it's actually the most important thing. Mm-hmm. It almost nothing else can happen without that. So for me, it always starts with story. It always goes back to story, which is usually the script. Sometimes it's an idea before you get to having the words on the literal words on the page and the actual descriptions. Depends on lots of things there. If the story's been commissioned, or you know, it's an adaptation or something like that. But it always goes back to story. So everything, all of your answers are in the story, all of your answers are in the script.
Right.
So on a really basic level, so preparation is actually the thing. So it's making as many decisions as you can before. Mm-hmm. The very first action is called.
Interesting.
Which means bringing all of the elements together. So casting, bringing actors. But before that happens, you're working with a casting person to talk through what the idea of the character is, and then that they go and do their thing. So it's literally bringing all of the elements together. So from a design perspective, from a locations perspective, from a music perspective, from a soundscape perspective, do they live in a house that has a loud fridge that comes on in the middle of the night? Does it wake all the animals up in the house? Do they then go and annoy their humans? Like all those sorts of crazy
all the
things.
Details.
Yeah, and the color, the feeling that you want to have for what it is, you know, does it have a moodiness to it? How can you use light? How can you use shadow? I mean, there's so many parts to it.
Yeah.
So it's
more prep work than probably in the moment work, right? Of course you're doing it once you're on set, but
yeah,
so much prep work and background work. And then tweaking as you go.
Yes, but I feel like you can only be, you'll be more in the moment, and you'll understand this from an actor's point of view, you'll be more in the moment if you've done the prep. Mm. As much as you can, but sometimes you don't. Sometimes the script comes at the very last minute, and then you have to make those decisions quickly. There's no time. You've got to make your day. For all the reasons, for the budget reasons.
Of course, there's extraneous factors that will play.
But the more you practice it, it's like anything else. I mean, it's like being a basketball player. You've got to be fit. You've got to eat well. You've got to get rest. You've got to wear the right shoes, you know. And then you got to practice dribbling. And then you got to practice your shots over and over and over again. It's you know, I don't know. I feel like most things are like
that. The conditioning. It's that conditioning, because I remember as a gymnast, it was like we would get to like play and do all the equipment, but then like at the end, there was like a solid hour where we did push-ups and crunches, mm-hmm. and like it's that prep work so you can do all those things to the best of your ability.
Well, it's like playing scales, right? Oh, it's like being a concert pianist. Mm-hmm. You can't play Mozart really, really, really well, unless you've literally sat there at the piano and done all the scales. Mm-hmm. Like you have to. That's a part of it. That is a really important part. I just had a thought about the landscape of Hollywood and like what is changing. You know, one of the big things that I think is changing, which is connected to more inclusion and diversity, is the kinds of stories that we're seeing in the zeitgeist right now. Mm-hmm. So I do think that there is a shift to the main characters and the heroes of our stories that are now, they have different faces, different body types, they may be from a different country. I think that is a really important thing, and we need more of that. And that's a shift that is happening. It sometimes feels like it's happening too slowly.
Mm-hmm.
But it is happening. And there's actually a lot of people out there in the industry who are pushing for that. And I think that's a good thing. There's a, for want of a better way, like a collective consciousness right now, like, yeah, let's have more of this. Let's have more women at the heart of the story. I think that's really an important thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking of women, you know, being at the heart of the story or being behind the camera, we're at this point, we're post-award season, and there were no women directors nominated for a Globe, a BAFTA, or an Oscar, which is wild because it was also a year where there were more women directors than ever in high-profile works, and it's like wild.
Right. So exactly. So what is that? There's a part of me that I'm a little bored with this right now. Mm-hmm. Truly, it's aren't we done yet? Like, really, we already know.
You're doing the good work.
We're doing the good work. And statistically, so you have to go. And I personally think it's a systemic thing, because something's happening. Okay, there's lots of different ways to look at this. But I think that the old systems are being shaken right now. And it's about moving outside of the system, creating your new systems. Like Alma Harrell talks about that herself. So that's, I mean, she's just made that amazing feature, Honey Boy, You know, like very, very powerful point of view, and someone who's actually doing things in the industry to make change. So free the beard, free the work, and, you know, changing things up. So initially that was from an advertising point of view, the world that she was in. So making or introducing the idea that the production companies, the clients, when they get down to their final three bids, that at least one female director was in the bid. And a part of the, so getting to a system issue, part of the issue with the women not being at that level or having a place at the table was because they weren't always working with as big budgets. So if you're not working with as big a budget and then you get a client who has a big budget, they want to know it's a lot of money, that it's a worthwhile investment. So they want people who already have the experience. So
it's kind of a catch 22.
Like, it's a little bit of a catch 22. Experience. Exactly.
To be at the table.
Right.
If they're running their system that way, but changing the system will change.
So changing the system.
Everything.
So she campaigned to have all of the vendors, so the production companies, people representing the directors, the client, all agree to having one woman be in the final running to make the bid. And then that helps to change. So then the clients are actually seeing, another version that it could be. And so at least then there's a chance. So that's that's one way to do it. And you can apply that theory to all the other industries as well. So whether it's the directors for episodic TV, directors for the advertising, directors for film.
Our A episode, our friend Alana talked about that, that getting the one in three for every bid, and that it's now pretty much that in advertising, but it's taken a bit to get there.
Right, but that's taken years to get there.
It's not quite there yet in TV and film.
No, it isn't. Now
that shift is like proof of concept that it can work and is working now
and
in their section of the industry.
Economically viable. And it's actually about opportunity. Mm-hmm. So now you hear high profile actresses talking about it, like the cream of the crop, the ones that do get nominated and win Academy Awards and things like that, saying, I will work with one female director in the next 18 months. They make a commitment. I think the Annenberg study proposed that. So they all decide, okay, great, I'll make up. But it needs to be more than that, because these people are also EPs on the films and TV shows that they're working on. So they have more power. They can push beyond that. And one other thing that I will say about that is it's not about taking the job away from somebody else, because things grow and change. The industry is growing all the time. We just talked about how many shows are being put into production right now. There is work there. It's not about somebody losing so that somebody else can gain. There's room. There's room. It's a robust system. There's room for more people at the table. And that connects to how is the industry changing. The nature of what it is changes. I mean, if we're just looking at TV, 50 years ago, there's only a couple of channels. There's only a few shows being made. Now we have all these streaming platforms. It's being made in a different way, even though, you know, it still comes from that origin. So there's more opportunity. And one thing that worries me right now, though, with the fragmentation of the industry and seeing all of the streaming platforms and the different smaller studios and them all sort of breaking it down, it still is a lot of, because there is high money involved in every aspect of the industry, people want guaranteed return on your investment, which isn't always the case. So they are making fewer bets on the same few names. And I think there's another way. I don't think that's the only way. I think that will change. It's just sort of something that we're in right now. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I don't know. We got off on something there. It's like
no, it's true. I am curious, though, about the no nominations. It's kind of like the women have done the work and have been acknowledged for doing the work sort of outwardly and amongst peers. And I think it's, I think there's no right answer to this question, but it's like, do they matter? Do the nominations matter? Because in a way, no, you could argue they've done the work. They're recognized by their peers and that's what actually matters. But it, then at the same time, it's like, no, changing the system, they do deserve the noms. Like, fuck that. You know what I mean? So I'm curious on your perspective, because obviously doing the work and doing the work well is step one. But it's like, why can't we just get to the step two now that we, the hard part has been done?
Okay.
Sets down cup.
Yes, exactly. There are specific reasons, and getting back to systems, why that is the case. So if you look at the body that actually gets to decide within the Academy, so if we're looking at the Academy Awards, within everybody who's a member of the Academy votes for their specific area. So if you're a director, you vote in the directing category. So if we, someone's done the breakdown of what it actually is, it might be the Annenberg study, it may be the DGA, I'm not 100% sure, but it's within the directing category, it's the people who are actually making the votes. It's like 86% older white men, it really is. So, sometimes people align with stories that are closer to their own. And we've all grown up, women, men, everyone has grown up in a world where we are used to putting ourselves in their shoes. That's how it has been forever, for a long time. So when I say we, I mean women and everybody else who isn't in the position of power, let's just say. It's sort of a funny way to say it, but we're used to empathizing and sympathizing and going through the hero's journey when the hero looks like that guy. They're just not used to it. They really don't know exactly how to do it necessarily. So it's a matter of change. So over time it will change, but that change is very slow. So the short answer is it's an older male white demographic that are actually voting. And I don't necessarily think there is malice. They're not like trying to hold on to it. It is just literally the world that they are in. So that's what they vote for. That is what resonates with them. That's what makes sense with them. They're not used to following Lulu Wang into the farewell in China and like a young artist working out who she is in the world for that character, Billy. So they're just, they may still appreciate it, but it's just a different thing. But there's something else there. So your other question is, does it matter? And I heard an entertainment journalist, Noelle, I can't remember her last name, speak to this point. And she's a woman and a woman of color. Yes, it does matter. And that may be a controversial thing to say in the female circles right now, but this is what she said. And here's the reason why it matters. Because for people who love film, it's a point of entry into the world of film. And for people who don't love film, it's a point of entry. So when we were all little, we all knew about Star Wars. Everybody had seen the movie somewhere, somehow. I think E.T. was the first movie that I saw in the cinema, and it was an event. Our mum took us to the movies. I still remember what my brother said about it afterwards. He was like, oh, E.T.'s fingers look like sausages. You know?
Like hungry little bugger.
Right. It has an impact.
Yeah.
It whether has, you know it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's culture.
And it, exactly. That's exactly right. Mm-hmm.
So that matters for sure.
Yeah.
That is why it matters. When I was a little girl growing up in Australia and just loved acting and I loved the movies and you love dancing and you love all these things, when the awards were on, it was the one ceremony, the one thing. And back then we used to think these were awards for excellence in your field. And they are. But now, being inside it, you also understand there's
so many
politics, marketing, all of these other influences that are a part of what it actually is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
speaking of marketing too, this isn't going to be the right statistics, but I did read somewhere that once you have a nomination, or even if you win, all the billboards after that, it's like you're 10 times as likely or something to see the movie from association. So yeah, in that respect, it does matter.
It does matter. It does. That's what happened with Green Book last year.
Yikes.
Right. But
gets
but
all
that's
a little. Yep. Nominated. Bop, bop, bop. Yeah.
Yeah. Because so then
people
it comes
recognize
into.
Recognize that even visually.
Yes.
Like that literal silhouette of the Oscar. You know that. Even if you know nothing about film.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we open up our streaming platform and they literally have a category, mm-hmm. Award-winning films.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And so now that film goes on that list, but some of the other films who either were nominated but didn't win or weren't even nominated. So that's why that's a part of why it matters. The total flip side is if we say it doesn't matter at all, then do we create our own something else? You know, a different structure. Do then we say we're not supporting?
Subscribe to that.
Yeah. We'll subscribe. We'll create our own and give awards where to people who aren't getting those awards.
Inclusion,
you know,
and diversity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's another possible way to do it. But it's controversial. But I do think they do matter. It does.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think they do for sure.
Yeah, as an actor, I go up and down. I'm like,
for sure.
F those things.
Yeah,
I don't need one of those. I just want to work and have fun and do my thing, and then I'm like,
so the moment you get any sort of recognition,
yeah,
like,
but that would be
beyond
really
directing,
cool.
I always know. I'm like, oh, you know,
that recognition.
It feels good.
That recognition. And I don't. I mean, some sort of like, just like you said, I love the word excellence. Like it's just a recognition of excellence. Mm-hmm. Like you've put in the work and it's now shown. And we've been raised on getting awards since we were started dance classes at 3 years old.
Yeah.
Trophies for everything. Yeah. So it's like we're almost just like conditioned in that way to be like, I know I'm good if I, you know, compete against the best and get this thing, you know, like just like the Olympics and just like, you know, you just become, you're still great and you're still in your craft and you're still doing your thing. And that's amazing and freeing. But yeah, the acknowledgement is also.
Well, peer recognition is mm-hmm. important because we are human beings. We live in a community. So it is another way to say it is it's acknowledging a truth. Mm-hmm. You know, it is. I'm seeing you seeing me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's the truth of it. But when the thing that I find a little bit weird about awards or in our world is it's not like a 100-meter race where you're running and you're running and I'm running and we're running from here and we're running to there. It's the same race.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same race. Like, every film is a different film.
It's almost like apples and oranges. Like, how do you even compare?
Yeah.
That's one thing I find very strange.
They're viewed with their eyes, and that's about the sometimes where the similarities end, right?
Like, yes. And so I have sort of a very mixed feelings about it because I agree. I think that the
record. Even the categories.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Sometimes they don't fit in right. And we try to label things.
I know.
That, you know, like,
I
don't know. Even actor and actress, that's like kind of been, I've heard that talked about lately, contentious. Do you just go to actor?
Yes.
And, but then how would you,
female.
We're so
female actor, right.
Right, female.
So still
qualifying. Like, does it matter?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's tough. We try to label everything in mm-hmm. life mm-hmm. stuff.
Well, we want to understand
we
it.
We want to understand
it's
it.
A way
it
to
meaning,
understand
but
it.
Then it's like, do you go too far? I don't
yes.
know. There's no right answer,
yes.
I think, either. But.
So I think it is good for us to talk about these things. And I also think it's good to have a pushback. I mean, right now, I'm not that interested in the awards, honestly, like personally right now in my life. But I also do think that it does matter because for people who, so all of us, we live in Los Angeles, like the three of us here, we live in Los Angeles, we are in this world, it's a big, big, big part of our existence. But there's a lot of people that that's not the case at all. So maybe they go to one or a couple of movies a year. Mm-hmm. They probably just more likely than not are watching TV and they're streaming things. So for those people, if they're only seeing stories that are have a certain shape, that are about the hero's journey, or we're only seeing guys in that story, then there, I just feel it's a chance they're missing out on something, because they're not having access to all of the things that we spend time literally thinking about and searching for. So I'll search for scripts that really do have female characters. Working with my writer collaborator from New Zealand, Narelle Scott, she specifically writes about older women. And I think that there's a whole segment of society that we're not really seeing reflected on screen in a very deep way. Mm-hmm. We are with... It's a subsection that gets some films made. I've noticed Bleecker Street has championed a few of those films in the last few years, but we don't always see that kind of a character. So I think that, you know, it's that, and then there's all the other versions of that. Mm-hmm. All the different writers writing about all the different perspectives and all the different storytellers bringing them to life. So we just need more of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many parts to it. It's like, this is such a funny conversation because you can...
There's so many.
Yeah, it opens so many doors, and then it opens the next door, and then it opens the next door.
But we're opening the doors?
Yeah, exactly. That's
maybe sometimes when
outdoor flow.
It's like California.
Get that fresh air, baby.
California architecture. Yeah. That's exactly right. Indoor-outdoor life.
You know, sometimes when it does get, at least for me, a little too heady, like you said, you're opening the door and then you go down this, and then you could argue this, and you could argue both sides. It's like, at least we're talking about
it.
We're the discourse is there, and that is something I truly feel is different than other times. Maybe even this little debut, but when I learned about this stuff in college 10 years ago, did the discourse around even the education was different.
Yes, exactly.
And then it is now. And that's, you know, 10 years, you could say that's a lot of time, say that's a little time.
Right.
It's a chunk of time.
Right.
And it is noticeably different. And like that alone, okay, cool. Let's take that as a win. The doors are opening. The conversations are flowing.
Agreed.
And that's when the change begets change.
Yep. And getting back to when you asked about the landscape of directing, well, when I think about what the landscape of Hollywood is right now and content creation, I'm actually really excited to see what it's going to look like in 10 years time.
Yeah. Well, I think it's going to be amazing and spectacular, and there's going to be it's going to be colorful, and like the genres, you're not going to be able to put any one thing in a genre anymore. I mean, I can only hope that it just is like, it's like sci-fi, drama, and comedy, and musical. Put it all together.
Exactly.
Why not?
But that's something that is actually, pardon me, a really exciting thing about the time that we're living in right now, that shaking up is happening, mm-hmm. that collaboration is happening, and people are actually seeing new connections.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, right, great, cool, let's see what this looks like.
Yeah.
So I am really curious to be like, well, what does that look like once we understand it a little bit more?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, we were still doing Netflix by DVD.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Just a few years ago.
Yeah. Not that long ago.
Yes. Yes.
I remember so specifically, like House of Cards was the first show that they like really made and promoted.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't even that long ago, maybe halfway through the decade, mm-hmm. 2015 or 14.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, that's the normal formula 5 years later,
mm-hmm.
a show on a streaming service that you drop 8 to 10 episodes mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. overnight.
Mm-hmm. And also breaking the fourth wall.
And breaking the fourth wall. All the things
also,
it did.
Yeah.
Kevin Spacey's so problematic. Yikes. But the formula was so... Oh, weird.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first thing I'm seeing. I can watch all of them at once, and mm-hmm. now we don't even think twice, and that's only a 5-year change.
No, exactly. And then you have genre-bending shows like Black Mirror,
mm-hmm.
and then you have, Netflix invested in the OA as well. I know that's just finished, but it's like thinking about it in a different way and being like, oh, we can have an episode that's 54 minutes and we can have another episode that's 42 minutes. We can have another episode that's, mm-hmm. you know, 63 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's still, whereas that wasn't possible before. Mm-hmm. And then there's definitely a leaning towards shorter form content too, which mm-hmm. I think is a part of what all that changing is. So you're looking at that show Special, which is on Netflix right now, but was originally developed at the WB, and they're about 15-minute episodes. And I think that that's great. How it's still about telling a story at its essence. I mean, even if you're looking at, I think you were talking about your friend who works in advertising, or we've talked about advertising. Mm-hmm. So yes, so it's like in 30 seconds, can you, and then like all the crazy stuff that's happened from Vine to TikTok right now, yeah. it's like in seconds. Yeah. It's not the same, right? It's not the same as the director's cut of a movie that's like, you know, 3.5 hours long, which is very long, right? Yeah. And 6 seconds, but it's still telling a story.
Yeah. Right? You can consume in different ways.
One and line. That's the end goal.
Yeah.
As directors, writers, producers, actors, we just want to get, we just want to tell a story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there's actually room for all of it. I mean, it's like going like all this genre bending stuff. It's like sometimes we just want the fun.
Yeah.
We want to laugh. We want to dance. We want that song to ring in our head the next day, you know. And sometimes you do want like the heady intellectual, oh my God, like.
Yeah. We're complex people. We need it all.
Yes. Yes.
What's your favorite tea?
My favorite tea?
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, can you talk a little bit about your tea? I'm confused on like the way we serve tea here is confusing mm-hmm. to you. So how do you get your tea?
Well, it's kind of
is
funny
it the
to
high
me.
Tea?
No, not necessarily. It's funny to me now because I've lived here for so long, but very often when Australian people who don't travel very much, they come here and you order a tea in a cafe or something like that, and they bring you a cup of hot water and a tea bag on the side, and then you'll hear all the Australians be like, but it's gonna be cold, like where's the pot, you want it to steep, it's like it's a sort of that's a funny thing. So I mean, look, there's lots of different ways to make tea.
Right. How much time you have.
Yes, exactly. Depending on what it is. I mean, we don't live in Morocco, right? So it's, you know, that's a whole other thing, what they do with their mint tea. They sweeten it. It's like, you know, if we lived in India, you have chai and there's like honey and all sorts of things involved in it, like the fresh spices that they mix for it. I don't know. So generally, I have 3 teas right now. So I do a classic English breakfast, which I put milk in. So that's, and tea first, then milk. If you're steeping it in a pot, we'll be in ritual where I turn the pot 3 times.
Okay.
Pour the tea.
I'm trying to be a tea spurt, so yeah. I need all the info.
Pour the tea, then put the milk in. Some old-fashioned people put the milk in first, but that doesn't make sense to me because you need to know how strong it is to how much. It's a ratio thing. Mm-hmm. I like strong black tea and milk. That's how I like to have it. I also drink green tea. And at nighttime, I've gotten into a chamomile ritual. So I just having
chamomile
that.
Chamomile ritual?
Yeah.
I had my chamomile last night.
That sounds fancy.
It's a calming.
I like putting it that way, though.
The ritual, yeah.
Chamomile ritual.
Yeah, it was just, you know.
You gotta have an herbal. Is it just like a moment you take for yourself and you just hold your cup?
You spin your cup 3 times and then you
light some candles?
It sounds like that. But really, I'm doing
you open a book.
I would do it the American way. Put the hot water in with the tea bag.
Drink 2 sips and you fall asleep.
Yeah. But it's like, so I have another Australian friend, and so we had a whole English breakfast or Earl Grey. She's Earl Grey. She's like, no, you've got to just dunk, 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 that's it. And I was like, wait, no, you have to let it steep, you know.
Oh yeah, I'm a steeper.
Yes. But with the chamomile, I only do a little bit and it's enough. So
it's a lighter flavor palette.
Even with the tea that you served me today, I took the bag out because sometimes it gets too bitter or...
Right.
So that's sort of...
We all have our own preference. So what's your favorite guilty pleasure you like to indulge?
that is a tea or could be anything. I used to feel guilty about this.
The last time somebody said I used to feel guilty about this, masturbation is what came out of it. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And this was my dear old man.
No, so. Well, with that, that was more shame from the Roman Catholic upbringing, but like actually, no, not really.
No. Me.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's about sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
Because we live in a time where there's so much pressure to be doing and be on all the time. There is this sense everywhere that you have to be perfect, you've got to get things right, you have to know everything, and it's exhausting. So our response to that is getting rest so that when you do have to be on, you're actually on. Mm-hmm. So I used to sometimes feel guilty about sleeping in the morning. I mean, having said that, lately I've actually been getting up very early, you know, and it depends on my schedule. It depends what's going on. So I'm not in production right now, so I don't have production hours. When you are, that's depending on the needs of the production. Sometimes you start late in the day. Sometimes you start hours before the sun rises. It just depends. But when I can, sleep is really, really important. And sometimes I struggle with sleep. Sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night, you know, a little bit of an insomniac sometimes. So it's important to have that rest. So I used to sometimes feel guilty about that. I remember talking about it with some friends a long time ago, and somebody asked, oh, when do you get up? And at that time, I used to work a lot at nighttime. And so at the time, I was like, oh, like 9 o'clock. And people being shocked, like, oh, like you're not getting... And no, if you need to rest, you need to rest. You're not functioning as a human being. You're not being safe when you get in your car and drive down the street, let alone anything else. So... and in the society that we live in, people feel like they have to be on all the time, 24/7. If you're not working 7 days a week, it's an issue in the tech industry. It's an issue in our industry. It's an issue in, I mean, it's a problem for our whole culture right now. So I personally don't feel guilty about it anymore. In fact, I think of it as actually looking after myself. If I'm
self-love,
looking after...
Self-love, self-care.
It is. And then I can be better to you and to all the people in my world, to my family, to my friends, to my colleagues. Then I'm more myself. I have a better attitude. I'm happier. So I used to feel guilty about
maybe
it.
Maybe sleeping, snoozing 3 or 4 times, taking the morning off, calling in sick. Like, that would be a guilty pleasure. But hey, that's also, sometimes you just need that too.
Totally.
Are you a siesta? Just take
siestas? No, but I meditate sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Meditating is definitely important.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you want to get clarity on?
That's a good question, too. Every time I get a new story, a new script, that's what I want. So I want that clarity of vision. I want the clarity of connection. It's really important to me. And the thing, and something else, I guess I also want clarity on, but you know, it's funny. I've been thinking a lot because we've just passed the beginning of the year and, you know, so goal setting and those sorts of things. And I've had more clarity with that because I've allowed myself more time for it to be an ongoing process.
I mean, I've always not, we've talked about this, I think we've been around each other at work, and I don't think setting your goals for one day, January 1st, is conducive to keeping them.
It was
They're
so
gonna
refreshing
change.
What you said. Yes.
We've chatted about it. And I usually give myself the whole month of January, but even that, you can keep coming back to them in editing because it's not holding up something you had when you were in a certain season of your life 9 months ago might not work for what you're doing now. But
exactly. So it's a constant reassessment, which I think is true for many things. It's true. So when you're an actor, you do your prep, you do the work, and then you do have sort of an assessment of going, okay, what worked, what didn't work, what would I do the next time? For me, that's the same with everything that I direct. So you do the prep, you do the work, so which is then the actual prep time, the production time, the edit post time, you know, and then you go, okay, what worked, what didn't work, what would I do differently? You do a reassessment, mm-hmm. and then you move on to your next project, which is never going to be the same, mm-hmm. even if it's the same. Even if you're directing on the same show, you know, next season or further down the season, it's still not the same because it's a slightly different story. But it's allowing yourself that time. And so it's less... what I want more clarity on, and it's a little bit more about allowing the time to get the clarity. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that can happen in a moment when, you know, we don't have a moment, we have a deadline, we've got to get the thing yeah. done. It's like, you know, the sun's setting, get the shot, you know, yeah. you've got one and done. Yeah. And sometimes you have more time to contemplate. You say, I'm going to give my answer tomorrow, I'm going to sleep on it tonight, mm-hmm. or, you know, what, continue the conversation. So it's having a little bit of time to get that clarity. And sometimes that really just means taking a breath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we feel that pressure all the time. Keep going, more, more, more. But sometimes it'll be more powerful if you take that if little breath.
Do your chamomile, get your sleep,
get your chamomile ritual.
And then... get your clarity in the morning.
Einstein always said if he was stuck on a problem, he'd go out and take a 20-minute walk. And like, so good. Just that, and like, and that's just like a meditation. It's just mm-hmm. like, just get out of it, pull yourself out of it for a second, mm-hmm. and you'll get clear. Because mm-hmm. like, you just kind of like relax your thinkers. Your thinkers yes. get to like be on pause for a second, and you yeah. get to be like, oh, get grounded. Like, look at this flower. Mm-hmm. And be like, aha, mm-hmm. clarity.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
For me, that's watching, you know, trashy reality TV, yeah, like Love shit. Island. Yes. Truly, I'll watch it, I'll be out of it, or I'll, my, you know, my intellect will be down, and then sometimes I'll just...
And then I get a text message that is three paragraphs.
No, but it kind of breaks, you know, some people take a walk and smell the flowers. I watch, you know, British people thirsty for each other. It love breaks down, passion. It turns my brain off in the way, though, that, so, right. no joke, sometimes when I'm watching, I'll be toned out, and then I'll have an idea, and I'll write it down, totally. Because I'm not, like, totally. I can zone out.
Yes, exactly. It's like,
you know, that we all have our way.
Exactly.
Clarity comes in all forms.
It does. Agreed. Understood. Yeah.
So where can people find your work or connect with you? Do you have... You have your website.
I do. So I have a website for my film. So it's bridgetandianthefilm.com. And Ian is the Scottish spelling, which is confusing to some people.
I-A-I-N?
Correct.
Yes. Crushed it.
Okay. Bridgetandianian.com.
Oh, bridgetandianthefilm.com. .com.
Okay.
And then I'm on Instagram at PattersonLeah3. So yeah, that's a way.
Is
and
the
then...
three symbolic
for spinning your cups?
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like I didn't even know.
Do you know? I really used to love the number 9, and so same. Obviously it's a derivation of that. And I think there's a symmetry with that if you're looking at
the triangle thing and yeah. art and yeah. how, and nature or whatever. There's always like
it's.
Triangles are
very, very, like very powerful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like it. It's not just because 1 and 2 are taken.
There's 7, 3, and 3.
Then there's that. Yes. And it's not Leah Patterson because there's another Leah Patterson out there. I Googled it one day who, I mean, there's a few of them in the planet, but there's one who's a salsa dancer and lives in the South.
Oh my God. Have you ever reached out?
Let's swap lives for a day.
Right. Would be hilarious.
It's kind of cool. You know, you're just like, yeah.
You're like, wow, there's someone in the world. Just knowing they exist.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
It's funny. Cool.
There's also a Leah Patterson who's a character on an Australian soap opera. Which oh, is
that's amazing.
I know, it's so funny.
Common name.
Yeah.
Oh,
funny.
Very nice.
Yeah. Very so, cool. Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, it's been a real treat.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming.
Very interesting conversation. Thanks, ladies. Yeah.
We appreciate it.
So cool. Yeah.
Hey, y'all, we made it to the end. It's the steep. We're going to talk about what we learned. And frankly, I learned a lot. I love talking to Leah just, you know, whenever I can get the chance. She's one of the best people I've met in LA, to be honest. But I learned so much about directing. I really didn't know a lot about the craft itself. Like, we hear, oh, director, best director. This whole award season, it was a lot about directors and women directors, but we learned a lot. I personally learned a lot about the craft itself. I think, so my steep, I think, was related to what she was saying about directing being not so much on the set. Like, of course it is, but I kind of had this idea in my head that directors, you know, they go to the set and they're the HBIC, they're in charge and that's their domain. And that's not untrue, but I thought it was really cool hearing what she was saying about the prep work that goes in and her finding what the script means to her and really just coming to set. And that's kind of the reward, and doing all the prep work before and finding how she wants to portray those characters and direct it and almost doing the lion's share of what she considers to be a director before she even steps foot on set. Kind of blew my mind. Didn't think about that. Amazing.
She explained it as like learning like the chords or learning the keys or learning, doing your scales between like, if you're a musician or something, it's like doing your scales. You're not going to be able to play the song if you don't know the scales.
Yeah.
So you have to practice those scales so that when you're on set, you got the whole damn song.
Right.
It was really good.
So cool.
It was really cool. She was just super inspiring. And I love what she's doing and how she's kind of got her hands all over it. She's doing some play, doing some TV, in the half initiative program. Like, she's all in it. And I think that's really rad. My steep is that directing sounds really cool. And if I ever were to direct, I would call you to help me.
Really?
To help me do all the prep work. Because if you don't know, Juliana is like the queen of prep. She has this shit down. Like, it's, this podcast has been a year in the making because we've been prepping. And mainly because Juliana was like, we can't just hit record. We have to prep this shit. And we prepped, bitches.
We prepped a lot.
That Virgo, she preps. This Leo is like, let's go in and see what happens.
But it's a yin and yang, baby.
It was totally yin and yang. That's why we rock.
Rock
this shit.
Prepping.
Prepping.
Yeah, so I guess the last thing I'll say that was cool that I think we both agreed, it's a co-steep. It's just how inspirational and interesting Leah's path has been to directing.
Totally.
When I first got to know Leah, I had only known that, you know, she's doing directing. But upon getting to know her, she had multi-careers before this. And it's just cool, inspirational, interesting, and overall, like, as a personally getting into entertainment, you know, as also not my first job, and kind of trying to fight my way into the industry the last year or so, it was really cool to have someone in the flesh who had done that and not only tell me her story, but really help and really, like, be a support there. So thanks, Leah.
Yeah. Leah was amazing. She's a leader. She's a fearless leader. Mm-hmm. She's leading all of us in the right direction. She's just truly and authentically herself and living her passion. And it's really beautiful to see.
Yeah. I can't wait to be that annoying person that's like,
I worked with her at a restaurant. Because I will do that.
I know. I'm going to be like, we had her on the podcast.
Like, we knew her.
Before. Yeah. You know. And then, you know, eventually I want to be like, I get to work with Leah.
Yeah.
As an actor.
Oh, like, absolutely.
Totally into that. Uh-huh. So, yeah. Leah Patterson, we love you. Come back soon on the podcast. We hope you all enjoyed that. And definitely like rate, review, subscribe. Let us know what you think. Give us some feedback. If you like hearing about people in the industry, awesome. Let us know.
We got a little a different direction in a couple weeks for you guys. We're going to be talking about food and the evolution and
innovation,
eating and food
and environment.
We got some good stuff.
Oh man, so. The content's coming. Hold on to your pants. I was gonna say hold on to your seatbelt, but it's not your seatbelt, right? You don't hold on to your seatbelt.
No, you shouldn't. You
say buckle up.
Buckle up.
Buckle up.
There's the idiom.
Because Los Pantalones are coming off.
Well. Buckle up, keep your pants on, preferably, and we'll see you soon.
See you real soon. TTFN.